From somewhere in Northeast Indiana, Mike Davidson lives. And now your host of the podcast, Mike Davidson.
All right, so if you were to ask me, okay, Mike, now you and your wife are weather spotters, tornadic activity in a storm. What is the first thing you look for with bad weather approaching? And I would say to you, I have no effing idea. Oh, hell yes, Mr. Rob Roop, thank you very much. It is me. It is Mike. This is Mike Davidson Lives. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading, etc., etc., etc. Thanks for hanging out for the next half hour or so. Kind of a bittersweet weekend. But before I get to too much complaining here, I do want to thank God. This is one of those things where, like, I'm just not very appreciative. I need to be more appreciative of the things I have. And I did this Thursday. I didn't mention this during the podcast. It seems like a silly thing now. But Friday, Hazy, my middle daughter, she went in for surgery to have her ear tubes fixed and her adenoids out because her throat had been bothering her. And relatively safe procedure, in and out. She's okay. But it's one of those things where, like, as a parent, you get nervous about things. And so I prayed to God to look over her, and he did. And, it's nerve-wracking. I can't tell you about the sense of relief I felt after she was done. She was resting, recouping before we could take her home. Well, my wife took her home. I had to go straight to work from there. But, just watching her sleep comfortably. And then, of course, wake up from the anesthesia and be cranky as all get out. But it was funny, though, getting home. I was wondering how she was going to be. Of my three kids, she was the last one to pass out Friday night. She's just like that. Lana passed out. Logan passed out. Hazy was still jumping up. And this is the thing, too. Next 2 weeks, she's got to take it easy. Okay, I mean, if she's, she's getting juice, she's getting, slushies and all that. She likes that stuff. But, like, she can be a wild child and jump off of things. She cannot do any rough playing for the next 2 weeks because of her ears and, of course, the throat. And telling her to slow down, trying to get her to slow down. Man, that's a task and a half there. All right, so that was the good news. The frustrating AF news was, for the last few weeks, and I've been hinting about this during the podcast, we were going to take this weather spotting class that the National Weather Service offered up. We missed the one up here in Fort Wayne, but our old stomping grounds just outside of Kokomo, Greentown, was going to host one. I think this was at the Eastern High School Auditorium. And my wife had her heart set on this because, she's a big fan of the movie Twister. She lived out in the country and watched storms roll through all the time. And, it was set for, 3 o'clock that afternoon. 3 to 5 was going to be this two-hour weather class. So we get up, we roll down to Kokomo, stop off for breakfast and coffee, visit a few bookshops, just to peruse. And we get there at 2:40, 20 minutes early. We see all the cars outside the auditorium, and we're like, all right, we're here, we're on time, right? Go in, and this was like my first indication something was up, because there's all these cars out in front of the auditorium, but the lobby is empty. There's nobody out there making small talk. I was like, well, this is kind of strange. And then I heard some talking from the auditorium. I'm like, okay, maybe they're all just kind of congregating in there. But it was just one voice on a microphone. And I looked at my wife, and I'm like, that can't be the class starting now, right? And she goes, no, it says 3 o'clock. We get there, stand there, and the guy's like, okay, we've been doing this for about 45 minutes now. We're going to take a break and come back. We were gobsmacked, man. We had no idea what the hell was going on. So she goes, oh, we'll regroup in the car. She's being very polite, very courteous, trying to get away from everybody. We go to the car, and the first thing out of her mouth was, what the actual F? And we looked at it. I looked at my phone. Because she had the screenshot like last week. She had everything planned and everything. But I looked at my phone, went to the National Weather Service website. The update was Monday of this past week. Oh, we're going to do it instead of 3 to 5, 2 to 4, so we can watch this video out of Louisville. So they decided to move it up to 2 o'clock. And of course, life is life, and you live life, and you don't think to go check something as exciting as the National Weather Service website every effing day. And, you know, we burned like about 3 hours worth of gas to and from to go to this thing, and it turned out to be a colossal bust. And my wife was just heartbroken, and I feel for her. And I told her, look, this sucks, but if you really want to be a weather spotter, you're going to find a way to be a weather spotter. And she's not reckless. She's pretty resourceful. So she will find a way to do it without, you know, endangering anybody's life in this house, and of course destroying any of our vehicles, because they're all paid off now. But yeah, that sucked. But the best part of that, though, is when we were having coffee, she came back from the restroom and hugged me from behind and just told me that she loved me. And it was a great feeling. You know, it was a little moment that we shared. And what made it even better was that she didn't have to fight to make her voice heard. The kids were at home with Grandma. But yeah, that was pretty much the gist of my weekend. By the way, Purdue had a pretty sweet weekend. Going to the Sweet 16, they demolished Utah State. I mean, I got back this afternoon, caught the second half of that game, and it just, no, they were killing it. And by the way, people talking about, like, Zach Edey, his big talent is that he's too tall. Well, yeah, so what? They're in the Sweet 16, and I would say Purdue means business, because they were humiliated last year. They were a 1 seed, and they got knocked out by a 16th seed. Here they are this weekend. They're going to be playing up in Detroit against Gonzaga. They have a shot to go to the Final Four. They have not won a national championship since the 20s. They have never won one during the Final Four era. And they look like they meant business. So we'll see. I mean, there's 15 other teams that might have a problem with Purdue wanting to win a national championship. I haven't seen Shogun Episode 5 yet. That's happening after I record this podcast. This has been kind of a weird weekend. It was that or finish up the book. Get to that in a second. But just to show you that great minds think alike, I have not watched the video, but The Critical Drinker, it is a show that he is recommending. And the only reason I didn't watch the video is because I have not seen Episode 5 yet, and I don't know if he got an advanced viewing of that before I did or not. I don't want any spoilers, but it's a smart show. You know, it's one of those things, like, if you complain about the white savior, if you're a lefty and complain about the white savior, or you're somebody on the right that doesn't like the woke stuff, good news for the both of you. These are just actual people, white or Asian, that have their own dreams and ideas. And it's just smart. It's just a smart show. And I hope to God, you know, halfway through they don't screw it up. But so far, so good. Loving it. Can't say that about a lot of TV shows. Can't say that about a lot of books. I take that back. The book I finished, it's well written. But you know how it is? You have an idea about something. And, you know, you go into it, either watching it, the piece of media, or reading the piece of media, and you come away with an emotion you didn't think you were going to have, or at least that strong. I like The Doors as a band. It's one of my, as conservative as my dad is, he grew up, he loved The Doors. You know, it's, Jim Morrison has that haunting voice, and, you know, 4-piece, not a bad band. So I bought the well-known biography, No One Gets Out of Here Alive, and I read that. Gasman, Matt Taluto, Doors was one of his favorite bands. He's a right-leaning guy. It's kind of weird. Left bunch of dark hippies from California, you know. They had an appeal to people. And I know that Jim Morrison was kind of a head case and, you know, a little bit on the smart side. But after reading that book, and keep in mind, I have been listening to in my 44 years of existence, about 6 or 7 decades worth of rock music, okay? You know, it spans a little bit. After reading that book, all I could think of is what a colossal, unprofessional, self-important, self-destructive, womanizing, dickhead-slash-asshole Jim Morrison was. A bit of a bum. And look, it's just, he was just not very receptive to other people. He may think he understands other people, but a lot of the time he was drunk, he was stoned, he was high off of something. And yeah, I know the other three guys in the band, you know, Krieger, Densmore, and Manzarek, you know, they imbibed in substances too. But what differentiates them from Morrison was the fact that, hey, they know that they can't get paid unless they put out an album or go on tour or show up to shows on time. And Jim Morrison just didn't have that. And I'm just scraping the surface with this guy, because the guy always drank. He was always high on something. Philanderer. It was rumored that there was like up to 20 paternity suits against this guy. And it just, when you read more and more about it, you know, people were kind of taken into this charismatic guy that he was, and he was charismatic. But I think this paragraph says it best. Jerry Hopkins, he's one of the co-authors of the book, and he wrote this. This passage, I think, maybe 25 years after the book came out. This is the last part of his epilogue here. I must add as a footnote that when I finished writing the early drafts of this book, I didn't like Jim Morrison as much as I did when I started. Maybe because many of the people I interviewed, his friends, so-called friends, acquaintances, and lovers, chose to emphasize the more negative or sensational stories, the picture that emerged was more often than not less than endearing. I think when Jim was around me, he was well-mannered, but after all, I was the press writing for Rolling Stone. Oh, no shit. I never did figure out why I was so affected by the news of Jim's death. Maybe it was the same reason so many others were. The music got to me. Well, yeah, there's that. Kind of demystifying somebody who would, if he wasn't in a rock band, you would call a bum and you'd want out of your apartment. This would be the guy that would never pay rent. Reading this book, couple of things. People were talking about, you know, oh, he made all this money, but he was never materialistic. He only had one piece of property. Well, no, he was materialistic. It was just a lot of the materials he was into buying, he ingested or imbibed in. Okay. And my wife has said this to me, you know, a woman's intuition is never wrong. Now, I'm in danger of saying anything else to this because I do have a penis. I would say that an honest woman's intuition is never wrong. If a woman is honest with herself, because there were a lot of women that lied to themselves about how great of a guy Jim Morrison was. And I'll just leave it at that. It wasn't like Me Too movement bad, but it was just the guy wouldn't commit. If you want to read this book, go ahead. But it really, that's the thing about rock stars is they really don't grow up, a lot of them. You know, some do. Some get wise. They kick the drugs. They kick the booze. Maybe you know, get into shape and everything, but others kind of live in this diluted little bubble they got. You know, in the last couple of weeks, last week, you know, you had John Mellencamp throw the hissy bitchy fit in Toledo over a heckler. And then you got a guy and a gal, Neil Young and Joni Mitchell. She announced she's crawling back to Spotify after the big Joe Rogan flap. You know, and the media was talking about how this was bad for Joe Rogan when all these 70, 75-year-old artists were leaving Spotify. How bad this was for everybody. But now Joe Rogan's got a new contract. He's not just exclusive to Spotify. He's still getting paid. He's still giving Spotify a lot of downloads. And, you know, Neil and Joni among others, crawling back to that platform. And there is something akin to, Neil Young and Joni Mitchell crawling back to Spotify after the big temper tantrum, as well as John Mellencamp throwing the temper tantrum last week, storming off stage and then coming back reluctantly playing shows. And, you know, looking back at a guy who didn't live past 27, Jim Morrison, never growing or maturing as a person, just relying on the charisma that a lot of people kind of glommed on to. These people are just so used to getting their way, so used to being called a genius, just a bright artist and everything. And once the crowd starts to fade, and goes off to other things, pay attention to other things, they just start getting old and bitter, and they throw temper tantrums. I mean, when Neil pulled his stuff off of Spotify a year or two back, I said that was the wrong way to go. If he's got a problem with Joe Rogan, call him an a-hole in a protest song, and your fans will eat it up. But instead of seeing that as an opportunity, he kind of cut himself off from a lot of fans and potential fans. Same with Joni Mitchell. John Mellencamp gets mad about somebody, saying, play your songs, and, he starts cussing them off, calling him a cocksucker, and I'll see you out in the parking lot, and the show's over, and then he comes back on and, plays awkwardly to an audience that just wanted to be entertained. Jim Morrison, during the Miami concert fiasco, which became infamous, he was saying, he's cussing out his fans, like, why are you here? Why? Because he's drunk and stoned. He's like, are you really here for the music and all that stuff? And as a fan, I'd be like, well, yeah, I want to see you guys play live. There's just not an appreciation for the people that want to hear them play. There isn't. They love the love, and they love the spotlight, but putting forth the effort, a lot of these bands, a lot of these artists, to just do killer songs, killer shows, just not there. And and Mellencamp and Mitchell and Young, they're old. They're in the twilight of their lives, so they have nothing else to prove. But that doesn't mean they can't be any less gracious about stuff. But I just found it, kind of interesting. I just finished this book. You got the Spotify stuff, Mellencamp, being a dick. No surprise there. Jerry Seinfeld's an old guy. He's in his 60s, and he's doing very well for himself. Maybe a little too well. Was it Forbes? It's one of those financial magazines. They're talking about, the big syndication deal that he has with Seinfeld, and of course it being on Netflix, and they say that those two alone, north of $500 million, about close to $600 million, and then, some of the properties he owns, his stand-up routines and everything, they estimate that Jerry Seinfeld, he himself may be a billionaire in terms of net worth. Now, Seinfeld's reps are downplaying it, so that's not true. But I think that's just kind of because Seinfeld doesn't want to be seen as just, an old rich fart. But he is. And he's successful. In fact, even if he didn't have the success of the show and he was just a successful stand-up comedian, let's just say he had the same success as a comedian without the show as he did with. And I know this is a hypothetical exercise. They still estimate that the value of his stand-up tours and HBO specials and all that, $100 million. So even if it was just a tenth of the estimated value, still very successful. And to do stand-up, you have to work your ass off. And the guy would write jokes, and I think he still writes a page of jokes every day. And that, he doesn't seem like he's somebody who holds his audience in contempt. If you're coming to see Jerry Seinfeld, he's going to give you the best show he can. Now, he may not be the same hungry guy he was in his 20s, but he still loves what he does. He still loves to entertain. And that's why the dude is a billionaire. Okay, real quick. I wanted to talk about Judd Apatow in streaming, because I don't think he's seeing the problem for what it is. I mean, Judd Apatow is a very creative director. He can be a very creative writer. I still think 40-Year-Old Virgin is one of the funniest things I've seen in the last 25 years. Shaun of the Dead's probably my favorite comedy in the last 25 years, but 40-Year-Old Virgin is well done. Great cast. But he's talking about streaming, and he said he was mortified that Netflix, for a fraction of the cost, can license out HBO shows and show them and have an audience instead of spending, like, say, $200 million on a TV series. And I kind of got a chuckle out of that, because with streaming, you know, you could stream anything from Leave It to Beaver to The Sopranos out there. And each show, no matter how old, no matter how wholesome, no matter how gruesome, has an opportunity to make a new fan. Maybe not have the same impact on pop culture as it once did when those shows were out, wherever. But it still has the potential to lure in a new fan. That was how I finally got to see Band of Brothers. I never had HBO in high school or college. I've got Netflix. It migrated over to Netflix this past year. I watched it and I loved it. It's one of the best things I've ever seen. I became a fan of that show. So I don't see anything wrong with that. And you know what? I've seen Breaking Bad like 3 times all the way through. God, if the kids keep a normal early bedtime, I might break into that again and watch it all the way through for a 4th time. You know, shows have their fans. If you do a show well, it will live on in some form or another. There's nothing wrong with that, comfort TV. But what I found kind of funny was Judd Apatow talking about how, like, you should spend like $200 million on a Netflix show or Hulu show or whatever type of show. And budget doesn't necessarily mean, you know, if you throw a lot of money at a streaming show, it's not going to make that back. Not a lot of times, no. You're not going to break even. $200 million on a show. You know, Disney spent tons of money, $200 million a piece on shows like She-Hulk, Secret Invasion, and nobody watched these damn things. Nobody bought a Disney subscription because of that. $200 million for unwatchable shows. Meanwhile, again, to go back to an old chestnut, Oppenheimer was made for $100 million, 3-hour movie, grossed damn near $1 billion, and cleaned up at the Oscars. It's not the money. It's what you do with the money. It's what you do with the resources. You know, if you want to create a good show, you have to have very talented and smart people involved. And, you know, people that don't look down at their audience. Always a plus. Okay. So this Moscow thing, to be serious for a tick, Moscow theater massacre Friday night, 133 dead, and I think ISIS is claiming credit for this one. But you know how it is with war and the fog of war. Not only have I heard that ISIS was involved, but I also heard that the Ukraine, the Russians, the Mossad, and the CIA were also involved. The internet's a fun place, by the way. You hear all sorts of things. But in all seriousness, Russia is accusing Ukraine. Ukraine intelligence is saying that Russia staged the thing. So it's one of those fog of war type of things. You don't know. You just don't know. So you err on the side of caution. And if you're an outsider, you don't jump headlong into this crap. But if what ISIS is saying is true, and these gunmen who killed a bunch of people and burned down this theater, if they are affiliated with ISIS, that means they're militant Islamists, and you know, they share a common thing with Hamas, which October 7th massacred a whole bunch of Israelis. You know, I think the gathering at this theater in Russia was largely Christian. So for them to do that is sending a message. For them to do that in Moscow with Vladimir Putin, a man who I don't trust, who gives dissidents indigestion with radioactive soup, or journalists develop a severe allergic reaction to elevator shafts. For them to do this to a guy who has been said to be brutal, you know, it shows you how committed they are to their cause and how frightening that is. And if bad stuff can happen in Israel, this bad stuff can happen in Moscow, and you know bad things happened here, stateside, September 11th, 2001, there could be some bad things on the horizon. I don't know anything specifically because I don't go into the dark web and I don't go to conspiracy theories, theorist websites. But I look at these two incidents and I keep thinking, well, there may be some sort of connection. Maybe. But again, Russia claims that they caught these guys trying to sneak back into Ukraine. Kind of a wait and see. But yeah, I'm speculating about a few things cautiously. Don't take my word as gospel. But, you know, one thing I'm glad I stayed out of was Kategate. Kategate. Princess Kate. Controversy with a photo the family put out, and apparently she was photoshopped into it. So everybody started speculating as to what was going on. I didn't pay it much attention. When I was being shuttled back from Yeoman's Service Center, I was dropping the car off to get worked on. My driver had it on. I make it sound like I'm in a limo. No, I was just getting a ride back from the shop to my house. One of the local morning shows were talking about this. You know, and all the speculation, oh, well, Kate found out about Prince William and blah, 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 blah. And everybody's got a theory. Piers Morgan. Oh, I hear it's real bad. I hear what's going on back there. If what I'm hearing is true, it's terrible. And, you know, there's body doubles. And Stephen Colbert doing a half-ass unfunny monologue about this. Speculating on Kategate. Princess Kate. And, well, I think what a lot of people forgot was not too long ago, Princess Kate, this was public knowledge, she did have surgery. She had an abdominal surgery. Not much else was revealed. So she kind of kept a low profile. But because she's a royal, everybody assumed the worst. Well, I don't think they understood how worse is worse. She had to make a public statement this past Friday. Not too many details were revealed other than she is battling cancer. She didn't specify what kind of cancer. I would have to assume it had something to do with her abdominal surgery. She didn't specify what stage, but she was getting care to curtail everything. And that I think the official stance from the palace is that after Easter, she will resume her duties best she can. After this, all these comedians, all these actors and actresses that badmouth Kate, you know, pals of Harry and Meghan, journalists, all these people that were saying bad things about this marriage, potentially, doing their best Jackie Gleason, humna, 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 I'm sorry, it's like, y'all, bullcrap. You know, this is the same complex of people who straight face will allow Meghan and Harry to do Oprah interviews and docuseries talking about how they just want to be left alone in their privacy. And you only know about this because they keep telling you how they want to be left alone in their privacy. The one royal who actually pursues her privacy because she's got other things to worry about, she can't catch a break from these a-holes. It's amazing, isn't it? And, oh, by the way, and Stephen Colbert got served legal notice because of his stupid-ass stand-up act on his show. And, you know, after, it's kind of funny because Jimmy Kimmel, of all people, said, you know, hey, we got to leave Princess Kate alone. You know, Jimmy Kimmel, who got upset about one line from Aaron Rodgers, he has not admonished his former podcast co-host for making the bad Princess Kate joke. Not yet, anyway. I mean, I shouldn't be laughing about this because this should never have been a thing. She, you know, cancer is not nothing to laugh about. It's a serious fight. And here she is. She's trying to do what's best for her. And these people that are so obsessed with her, who live and breathe by royal media coverage, can't leave her alone. They assume the worst. And these people that are apologizing, a lot of them are the worst. Okay, a couple quick things, because as always, I run out of things to talk. Well, I don't run out of things to talk, I run out of clock. That's the problem. Up in Minnesota not too long ago, non-avian livestock tested positive for bird flu. I think this was either a goat or a cow, one of the two. But they say this is a dead end. It should not jump to any other mammal. Should not spread. You know, at least until 2 weeks before the election. We'll see. Huffington Post, interesting article. You know how, like, if you cup a spider, if you catch a spider in your house instead of stomping on him or her, and you let him out into the wild, you're essentially killing them because only 5% of household spiders have ever been outdoors. They're saying that the bulk of indoor spiders have always been indoors. And it's kind of like, you know, having an indoor dog or an indoor cat. So the household spider, they're basically the poodle of the arachnid kingdom. And your shoe's a lot more humane than cupping these things. Capitalism in decay. Babylon Bee, or not the Bee, I'm sorry. They found this shirt. Ideologues, bunch of idiots showing how smart they are, making fun out of things. Capitalism in decay T-shirt going for $35 in this day and age of inflation. Yeah, a lot of the good news is a lot of the people that would actually wear it can't afford it because they don't have jobs. So this seems like it's going nowhere. And finally, Wendy's, DoorDash, delivery, teaming up to do delivery drones. You can get your $17 Baconator delivered to you from the sky. Of course, that's probably going to cost you $29.95, you know, shipping and handling and all that. And with that all said and done, until next time, stay fresh.
You've been listening to Mike Davidson Live. Be sure to check him out on social media. Like him at facebook.com/mdavidsonlives. Follow him on Twitter. Look for @davidsonlives.